This is Taylor Martin, writer of 816, Nicholas Obenreiter. You're listening to The Blacklist Exposed on Golden Spiral Media.
I don't know about you all, but a golden parachute sounds way better than a bullet to the head. Welcome to the award-winning The Blacklist Exposed podcast. Greetings, one and all. I'm Agent Troy Heinrichs.
There's a good Sylvester Stallone movie called Bullet to the Head. You, just so you know. I'm Agent Aaron Peterson, and let it suck for a second. That's going to be added to my lexicon, I think, for a while. I'm going to use that every chance I get. Thanks for joining us yet again for number 133 in The Blacklist, Nicholas Obenreiter. Show notes and other intel for this episode of The Blacklist Exposed can be found at theblacklistexposed.com.
I think I want to see a Stallone movie now called Golden Parachute.
Yo.
He jumps out of the plane and falls to his death.
You're the disease, and I'm the cure.
Oh, my gosh. Welcome to the podcast, everybody. We are back and having a blast with all of you here on The Blacklist Exposed. We got some...
Hey, depends on who you ask. Apparently, that decision is split. Based on some feedback the last week. Half people are having a wonderful time, and then there's another half that apparently are not, maybe.
I will just say, I had three people and a dog die in the last 30 days, so if I am off, I am sorry, but I've been grieving a little bit.
I wish you were off the show. What?
What?
That just happened. I'm kidding. I kid, because I don't want to do the work.
That's true. If you're new around here, though, welcome. And we just basically cover off on a little bit of stuff from last week, get into this week's case profile for Nicholas Obenreiter, and then move into wise words from Res Rhetoric. And then we'll get into your thoughts in Special Agent Intel. But first, we're mobilizing some assets. Aaron, what did the people have to say from last week?
No, I got a more important question. When you do Res Rhetoric, are you going to record that from inside of a vault?
I'm going to do my very best to make sure that I nap through the whole thing. I've never slept before.
Did Dembe lock him in the vault? Is that what happened?
I want to know who's the guy that broke into the vault first to put him in the vault and then lock him in there.
Gotta be red. What was your question? Oh, what are we mobilizing assets for? Simone Poole. I'm sorry. You know what? I've heard it both ways. Assuming this is a current exchange, I would think Red and or Sikorsky are moving / using something valuable for their cause, maybe to end or distract Townsend and or Liz's revenge plot.
Okay.
Sure.
Vlad said, I think it's to protect himself and the Eastern friend from Liz, knowing that she's close to finding out the truth.
Is she, though? This is where Thor comes in. Is she, though? Sarah
that
says...
That Thor or regular Thor, just out of curiosity?
That would be regular Thor. That was an old message which she found in her so-called mother's storage. I don't think this message has got anything to do with current events, and I still think that decoy was for Liz. Red didn't lie to Cooper. They already had a plan in their mind. If Liz somehow managed to get to decode that message, well, about Red part, I might be wrong, but the message Liz got was from her mother's time.
Oh, that is true. It was the paper from the storage locker.
I don't remember. That was like a week ago. I don't remember anymore.
I was so confused in that whole episode, to be quite honest. Like, who's decoding what and what's going where and, you know.
I think it was a little confusing. Maybe that was intentional, so we didn't know what was what.
Yeah.
You know, because Liz is so close to figuring out that secret.
So close.
They don't want to spill it out too clearly. And then maybe NBC will throw it in a promo for... explain clearly.
Or we're going to get to the end of the eighth season and it's going to be like, and the answer is, we'll tell you next season.
I hope they just blurt it out. I hope they just do it. I hope Lewis from Ant-Man shows up and that's how they determine the connection between Red and Liz. That would be my favorite ending ever because it would piss everybody off except me. I would love it.
I just hope they do it before the finale. Like they do like an episode 19 or something. Unexpected.
I would do it in 17. How about that? Whichever's the closest, do 17. Who else we got?
We got Rory. He says he believes it's a means because it's time to begin the end game, aka the 30-year plan.
And finally, Phil Hooten. Hooten, here's a who. A surprise birthday. It's Hooten. A surprise birthday party for Dembe. Aw, that would be fun.
Deserves one. He's a nice guy.
I don't think his daughter's going to be invited.
true. When he finds out he was duped by his own kid.
So question for next week. This is pretty straightforward. Yes or no. Will our friend from the East survive? Will he? Will Stupanov make it? Stepanov? Well, I had like this idea of a Love Boat crossover. Sorry.
Yeah, all right, you're not wrong though, because I think Cooper was like said his name one way and then Wrestler said his name a different way. Was I picking up on that or was that not?
No,
right?
That's exactly why it confused me at first, and thankfully they had it written. So I'm like, oh, whew, okay. Stepanov. Got
Stepanov.
It.
Stepanov. You got it.
Got it.
All right. Well, now before a crew comes in to disinfect all of us, let's go ahead and get into this week's Kiss profile.
Okay, well, the crux of Nicholas Obenreiter is we open with a guy at Kelman Realty who launders Townsend's money, and he's frantic. Charlie knows about the laundering, but that's it. It's just Charlie. It's still a big deal. Charlie takes the file and splits before the auditor takes out everybody else that's there, including the guy who was freaking out. So here's an idea. Next time you get audited, leave, because they're there to kill you all. Just a warning. Tell Obenreiter there's one loose end. And of course, that would be Charlie, which gets the auditor fired, by the way, in case you didn't catch that later on. Mm-hmm. Nicholas Obenreiter is a consultant to criminal organizations. Now, what he does is basically assess the needs of criminals and then helps them execute a plan. And it's a myriad of plans. He's not just limited to one single thing. He really is the guy that goes in, figures out what your fallacies are, and orchestrates a plan to implement in order to get you on the path to correct criminal organizationing. Is that right? Like, yeah, maybe he puts in processes in place or something and builds some ISO steps. I don't know.
Exactly right. You're just trying to make sure that you can survive a Blockbuster, shakedown. You become the Netflix instead of the Blockbuster of the criminal world.
Oh, that's very important. You don't want to be the Blockbuster. Mm-mm. There's only one of them left.
I even think that one closed from last I heard.
Somebody else save it, right? It's got to be saved. They still got a Twitter account. It's fantastic. You should check that out. It's fun. And he goes to kill the loose end, but Wrestler and Park get there first.
And Obenreiter is currently working for one Neville Townsend. Shocker. Didn't see that coming. So.
But Red gives the case to Donald this week as they search for Nicholas, not to capture him, but to turn him over to Red so that Red can infiltrate Townsend's organization. What did you think about Wrestler being Liz?
That's a really good question.
They had a weird conversation about horrors. That was interesting.
Well, I think it's fun to watch. This is what I love about the Donald and Reddington relationship is that they were enemies for so long. And then over the years, they've almost become like, I'll tolerate you, but I don't know if I can tolerate you. But it almost seemed like they were kind of fun and chummy this week. And I'm just, I'd like to know what would happen if Wrestler and Red were actually on the same side for once. How much fun would that be?
They were, as the Statham calls it, taking the piss out of each other. They were. They were definitely giving each other a little slack. Except I never like when people use the word whore. I just don't like it. I think it's a very negative connotation. I don't like it. Just putting it out there for anybody that doesn't care. So Wrestler, I'm mad at you. Not that you're here, though. I'll never be mad at that. What else happened? Red creates some distrust in Townsend's new chief, opening up a hole for Red to insert Master Thief Priya Lagari, not to steal from Townsend, but to assassinate him. Or as I like to call her,
I was surprised that they were going to go for the poisoning by drink methodology, because that seemed like that would have been a little bit more challenging to do. I thought she would have been a little more crafty, because that seems like a simple thing if she's this master thief. But sometimes if you're a master at something, the simple things are the more creative things.
I just don't know if I'd trust that ring. I mean, it looks nice and blingy, but she opened it super easy. I'm like, that clasp is not going to hold. Like, you just knock that ring and that poison's going to fall out and you're exposed and you're not a master thief anymore. You're just dead Priya.
Let's not forget that there's probably some, poison and dust from the pill that's laced on there. Like, you should have just kissed the ring and you should have dropped dead right there. That would have been the easier way to do it.
Kiss the ring.
He did. He was
that's
like,
true. He
that
did.
Is a beautiful diamond.
That is a beautiful diamond. No, it's actually a little container which holds your death. Meanwhile, Liz is working slyly with the task force to find Red's friend from the East by casing a cafe in Paris with Aram. Except Liz doesn't realize that her every move is being watched by Townsend. Why does I don't understand why people aren't paying attention to this stuff anymore. Liz and Wrestler exchange info about our friend, now known as Ivan Stepanov, that is intercepted by Townsend's men. When Liz has Essie and her team try to abduct Stepanov, the gig is blown as Townsend's men get there first. So, what did you think about Nicholas Openrader? Because here's my immediate thoughts. Not much of a blacklister. I liked this episode. I had a lot of fun. I'm just saying, wasn't much of a blacklister.
Yeah, and this one was written by Taylor Martin, as we mentioned. She's been with the show since the beginning. So I think when people talk about season 8 and some of the frustrations we might have had over the, you know, the non-Liz sequence, what have you, I think this episode felt like traditional Blacklist once again. It had the right beats. It had a little funny Red stories. It had Red being kind of like, oh, yeah, that's your criminal files over there. So, you know what? Suck it up, Buttercup. You're going to work for me whether you like it or not.
I just wanted more of the Blacklister. I thought there it was a lot of fun. All the relationship stuff was great. I had a lot of fun with it. I'm just saying it was a really interesting idea to basically have this guy, this consultant who does this for criminal organizations. That was really, I would have liked to have seen that fleshed out a little bit more, I think.
Yeah. Or not have him be the Blacklister, but have Priya be the Blacklister, because she was probably more Blacklistery than Openrader was. In this particular episode,
Openrader had a cool gig, man. I mean, he goes in and he can go to any criminal organization and figure out what's wrong and fix it. I think that's great. I think that's clever. That's a really interesting idea. I would like to see that fleshed out. Priya's kind of, we've seen that 1,000 times, right? And anything, movies, TV, this is kind of something that's rare. It's like The Accountant.
There you go.
It's Ben Affleck. He's Ben Affleck. He doesn't look like Ben Affleck by any means, but it's Ben Affleck.
Or like The Equalizer, because he does is cleans up stuff and kills people.
Equalizer gets back at bad people. This person helps bad people.
He gets back at a few too. I mean,
that would be the unequalizer. That would be the dyslexic geyser.
Something of that nature.
I don't know what I'm saying. I don't even think I'm speaking English. Let's get to our characters. How about that?
Yeah. No real music this week. There was the tune that was playing in the background of the cafe that we weren't able to make out over the dialogue, and then there was that cool heist track that we assume was actually from Dave Porter himself, because nothing flagged on the old Shazam to pull up a song for that. So nothing new this week, trying to save the music budget, I think, for the final push here. But you can listen to all the great songs that are on the Blacklist over on both Spotify and Apple Music. Just go over to our website, theblacklistexposed.com, and all the playlist links can be found on there.
Now, we've got 6 episodes left, right, after this?
This was 16, so 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 6, yes.
Yeah, that's what I said, like 6. You took the longest way in the world to answer.
Well, because we have a rule that you don't do math on a podcast. Counting is not math. Counting is counting.
I didn't know we had a rule. Apparently, Troy has a rule.
He didn't inform me. I have a long-standing rule from my podcasting career.
I would, this is where it should start, because this, to me, very much felt like what I would call a bridge episode. I know some people might call it, I don't think this is a filler episode. I think this is a bridge. This is we need to go from here to get to here. So it's a bridge. It's connecting the tissue so we can get to where the story starts kicking into overdrive, because we really got to be really close to like the end game situation talk, right? With 6 episodes left, I mean, the season finale is coming around the corner. There's the Liz versus Red thing is going to be kicking in overdrive.
Yeah. Like if I were like mapping out the rest of the season and I have no knowledge of anything beyond today, just for the record. But if I was mapping out the season, I would probably map it out to some extent of next week would be Ivan Stepanov. Then the week after that's probably a bridge into 8:19, which I would call like at 8:19, I would say that should be Liz King conclusion. And then whatever comes out of Liz King conclusion sets up the final 3 episodes of the season, which we could all pretty much assume at this point is going to be like Neville Townsend part 1, part 2. And then if that happens, that would basically set up then the launch into season 9.
I think it's going to go the other way around. I think you're going to take care of Townsend first and then Liz. Liz is going to be she's our quote unquote big bad. So she's, I think, going to be the finale.
Interesting.
I do. That'll be your Liz King conclusion.
What if in like,
oh boy,
if Liz were to be first before Townsend, then something happens to Liz. What if Liz dies, and then Red is pissed off at that event happening, like dies for real this time, pissed off at that event happening, and that sends him on the trajectory to kill Townsend once and for all.
No, I don't like that. She deserves to have her story treated more respectfully, I think.
If she got the answer and then ended up getting caught in the crossfire?
Nope. I'll say it again if you want me to, but nope. I think that would be doing a disservice to her story. I mean, okay. It's 8 years, and then you make it, basically it becomes about Townsend, and I don't really care about him. There's times where I'm like, you're way over the top, dude, so relax. So he's not nearly as interesting a character to me as Liz Keenis. To me, I'm just like, as soon as he dies, I'll be like, all right, who's that guy again? Like, he's not a Kirk, where he didn't really stay with me at all.
I gotcha. So even though Townsend...
Although I do dig the punching bag thing, that's kind of cool.
Even though Townsend is really the crux of this whole thing, right? Because Townsend has been chasing Katerina Ristova his whole life.
Well, he is the muscle, the associate. He's the one he's really threatened by. I don't think he's really threatened by Liz. He's really threatened by Townsend. So that's more. He would take him out, and then maybe Liz will listen to me. Maybe she'll settle down. We can have a talking to, and I can finally bring up Anne again, because no mention of her this week, which I thought was kind of odd.
Well, Red and Liz would have to have that Anne conversation, and they didn't interact.
Right, but they need Townsend out of the way to do that.
Yeah, because they didn't interact this week at all, if I remember correctly. Red and Liz.
Nope,
Liz only interacted with the task force and Aram specifically.
Not this week. All right, so moving on for characters, we got Park. Didn't really have a lot to do. I don't really think there's any distinguishing character moments. A little ass kickery,
little slam the door, pouty face from the candy from the baby line. And then of course that still sucks after I thought about it for a second. That was pretty much all she had this week.
Yeah. I got to come back to the candy line. I was saving that for Aram, since he did a nice little, nod to himself, or they wrote a little nod to himself. That was kind of clever. I don't know who wrote it, if it was Taylor or somebody else, but I like that, because I'm like, that was, because it wasn't so pointed. It was kind of just, you know, off the cuff a little bit, or he delivered it that way. So Aram, after being denied a trip to Paris and Chemical Mary a few weeks ago, Aram finally got his chance at the croissant as he sent to Paris, April in Paris, to investigate. And of course, Liz stole his damn croissant, and that was some cold ass shit. I was like, who does that? What kind of monster gets in a car with someone who has a delicious croissant in a foreign land that you know is especially important to that particular location, and you just take it? What kind of, like, all these people that keep writing in every week, like, Liz is lost, Liz is gone, she's gone too far. That's too far. Like, that's my line. Kill all the innocent people you want. Steal my croissant? My wife will attest. Steal my food? We're done. We are done.
What's the line for minute work?
Savage.
Never touch another man's fries.
Absolute savages. Anyway, so they have a nice conversation. I will say they had some really nice human moments in the car. One thing I will say, and fans can take this for what they want, you know, but even though I like Liz and Wrestler, and I know Liz and Aram are friends, I feel like their chemistry is more palpable. Like when they're together, I felt like when they're having their quiet moment, don't get me wrong, it can be very much read as a friend moment, but on the same token, I'm like, you know, if they wrote the characters different, that would totally work as affection, because I feel like there's more emotion coming through between the two of them. It's a personal opinion.
I would say that you're onto something, but I wouldn't call
it. I'm not saying they're doing it intentionally. As actors, I read that. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, and I think you're reading it right. I think your direction is a little bit off, in the sense that I don't think it's an affection of loverness. It's an affection more like brother and sister.
I get that. I'm saying if they had written that differently, that would totally work. Like, I feel like they would have more palpable chemistry, even though I like her and Wrestler together. But I'm just saying, when they're in that car, and I'm like, that's affection right there. I mean, that would play if they went a different way with those two characters. Like, say it was her and Aram instead of her and Wrestler, that would have worked wonderfully. I think that they work well together.
I think they're just because the friends off the show too. So
So whatever it is, yeah. I'm just saying it works. That's all.
Yeah. It was a nice
moment. I don't hang out with them.
It was a cute moment.
I don't know, with the little puppy dog eyes and like, what? Well, you promise you're going to be good if we go inside? One way to find out.
Speaking of the Aram character specifically, I think this is something we should bring up because now he was duped by Liz with the whole the floor is lava scene, right? Mm-hmm. Let her take Agnes. Then he was duped again with the 16 ounces, the chemical, the bomb.
Sounds like a dupe.
Right? And then he was duped a third time with the Cyranoid. So at what point is Aram going to get a backbone and say, you know, screw you, Liz. Like, three times you've messed my life up. Why are you here? Like, get out of my car.
Because she brought Rocco with, and that's and basically assured him that she would be good and then put a gun in the guy's face. But she said she wouldn't have killed him, so I believe her. Kinda. Maybe.
Do you think that's a character flaw, or do you think that's just something that we haven't really dipped into as far as Aram being pissed at Liz? Because he hasn't really had that conversation with her. Like, I'm pissed at you.
I think it's the character.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's right.
Okay.
Feels right. He keeps wanting to believe in her, and he's going to keep trying to... Even when he's back at the task force, he's always the one that keeps hoping she's the same old Liz. So I think it's just him constantly being optimistic about her. He believes in her.
Which then makes him a little naive every time she shows up.
Nah, maybe, but he doesn't want to give up hope. It's just like when you are friends with someone who has some kind of addiction or a problem of some sort, you know, you keep wanting to believe in them. I mean, they might let you down a few times, but you keep trying to believe in them because you know that they're capable of better. Even if they're not delivering better, they're capable of better.
Ah, that's a really good analogy. I like that. Philosophy from Aaron.
I don't have it often. I'll tell you one philosophy I do have. If you steal my croissant, I will beat your ass. So don't touch it. He does admit he stole a kid's Butterfinger on Halloween, which if you've ever seen his ads, he's the Butterfield private eye or FBI agent or whatever, whatever it is. I don't remember what it is, but don't watch commercials.
The BFI, Butterfinger Investigator.
Thank you. BFI. Yeah. So that was a nice, I don't know if it was intentional. It had to be though, right?
It had to be. Or it was like ad-libbed in or something from him. And then
Taylor is writing and just giggling to herself. He's going to have to say that. He delivered it. He delivered it well.
And it's one of those things that nobody would pick up on unless you're like a true like fan following the show, following Aram, following Amir, you know,
following Candy.
You'd pick up that, you know, that connection, if you will. But if you're just a general, you know, casual watcher of The Blacklist, you might not pick that up, and it works even without.
Well, I'll tell you what, I don't watch any commercials, but I watched his because I got to support Amir, and they are hilarious, actually. So I liked the little tie-in. It was fun. It was a fun little nod.
It's always the grandma.
Moving on to Russ, and it also was nice to have Aram get some story time this week. I feel like he's really been lacking the last few weeks.
100%.
And again, brings humanity. Had great moments with him and Liz. Like, I really love those moments. And Wrestler is Red's handler, like we talked about. And apparently they found an address in Paris of the cafe, which is what led to Aram being there. And I'll include your optimism in my debrief to Cooper.
That was funny.
Yeah.
I think Wrestler brought the humor this week.
How so?
Especially when they did the whole like Open Raider gets kidnapped and they get shot and everything. And then Park was like, did they buy it? And then he's like, well, I bought it. Because he got shot and looked like he was dead. So I was like, that's funny.
That was funny. Although you kind of wonder, like, how many prisoners are going to buy this? They've done this ruse like 4 or 5 times now.
I have to say, I was, for a minute, like, I know they were talking about a plan to get him to Red, and I was probably really tired when I watched this the first time through. But the first time through, I thought, oh my God, they shot Park. Is she okay?
Shame on you.
And then when they shot Wrestler, I was like, oh wait, no, it's a ruse.
As soon as she got shot, I'm like, oh, so basically squids. Got it.
So
Cooper didn't do a whole lot.
I'm sorry, Laura. I didn't mean to like, you know, put Wrestler and put Donald over you, Diego over you.
Didn't you though? Cooper didn't do anything. Dembe reads The Stranger by Albert Camus. So you want to explain what that was?
Yeah, it's a 1942 novella by French author Albert Camus. Its theme and outlook are often cited as examples of Camus's philosophy on absurdism, as learned by Red, coupled with existentialism, although Camus personally rejected the later label. The basic premise of the story is as follows. A shipping clerk living in French Algiers in the 1940s, Marisolt is a young, detached, but ordinary man. The novel begins with Marisolt receiving a telegram informing him of his mother's death. He attends the funeral, but surprises other attendees with his unusual calm and, once again, detachment. Over the next 2 weeks, Marisolt carries on a life as if nothing tragic has happened, and he frolics with a new girlfriend, befriends a pimp, goes on a beach vacation with both, and it's almost like this guy is strangely detached or something. During the beach vacation, however, Marisolt and friends are confronted by two Arabs. Violence ensues, with Marisolt eventually killing one of the Arabs. It was a hot day, and aside from the weather, no explanation exists for Marisolt's crime. At his murder trial, the court seemed much more interested in Marisolt's lack of grief over his mother's death, and then the alleged heinousness of his crime, judged to be a cold-hearted, non-conforming, and of course, detached misanthrope. The jury finds Marisolt's character, not crime, the character, per se, punishable by death. So I thought this was an interesting choice, because when you think about Reddington and his, like, death surrounds me, I feel death creeping in from all doors, yet he's, like, calculated, and he can take out what he needs to, but, like, he only feels, like, the grief at certain moments, right? Standing over to his mother's grave. I would be standing over another grave now, you know? So I think there's just some contradictions here of, like, the man that Reddington was and then the man that Reddington has become at the same time.
Well, we know he sent Espinoza to his death. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I guess he's not really an innocent, but didn't really deserve to get punched into oblivion either, probably. What are you going to do?
Yeah, no remorse. The other fun fact about this particular story in general that I found was that Killing an Arab, the 1979 debut single by The Cure, was described by Robert Smith as a short poetic attempt at condensing my impression of the key moments in The Stranger. So could he use that song, you know, while they were reading the book and talking? That would have been a cool combo, but
are you missed a fan of
opportunity.
The Cure?
I like The Cure. The Cure's good. Yeah.
Every night I burn. I love that song from The Crow.
Yep.
Good song. Townsend. Well, Red sends a message through his contact to Townsend about one of his associates, Espinoza, who he ends up killing by throwing him in a bag and beating the ever-loving piss out of him. That's the literal version of taking the piss out of someone. Because he peed himself. Because he's dead. Okay, he's eavesdropping on Liz, and he hears wrestlers call. He doesn't know who Stepanov is, which I kind of interesting. I figured as well-connected as he was, maybe that name would have popped before, but I guess not. Now knows that Liz is working with the FBI because of the eavesdropping. And then, so because of that, Essie was supposed to get Stepanov, but Townsend got there first, like we talked about. And now, at the end, he has their friend from the East. Now, I do think Townsend's a fun character, but sometimes he does play it a little over the top to where it's like, well, bring it down there, Roger Abbott. We don't need to go so big. What did you think about him kind of wanting to believe in Liz throughout the whole episode when he was so quick to dismiss her like the last episode?
I think it's just a product of who he is. He's very impulsive yet strong at the same time, but fearful also. He's a weird guy. We'll just put it that way. Like, there are just things that he does where he's like, my way or the highway. And then there's other parts where he's like, four people are trying to inform him on what to do next. So I just don't think he's all there in the head. Like, either the death of his family, like, completely messed up his brain, or the drugs he's taken to try to help him sleep or stay awake if he doesn't want to go to sleep because of the dreams. You know, there's just something wrong with him, something off about Townsend in general.
There's a lot off with that dude. Whack-a-doodle. Well, we end with him asking our friend from the East. Now, I guess we stopped calling him Sikorsky. We're not as sure as we used to be, or what?
Right. His name is Ivan Stepanov, and he is responsible for creating the Sikorsky archive.
So we just assume he's Sikorsky, but he might not be Sikorsky. But they called him Sikorsky, so he's Sikorsky, right? Isn't he Sikorsky?
He put on his webpage, the actor, put that he was playing Sikorsky. Then it got on IMDb that it was Sikorsky, but nowhere in the show was it ever stated that his name was Sikorsky. It was always just the friend from the East.
I mean, if he put it on there, he might know, right?
Maybe.
Spoiler alert.
Could be.
But he's responsible for creating it. So there, it's all that really matters. But he does say when he's beating the smack or getting ready to beat the smack out of Stepanov, he says, Katerina Rostova was N13 and Katerina Rostova is dead. Why are you protecting Reddington? Why did my family have to die to carry out whatever plan you two are hatching? Now we know that, that he's already lying to him because he looked right at Red and said, you're N13. Now Red didn't say, yes, I am N13, whatever, but I'm just saying like he knows that. So what do you got with this whole, what do you think he's going to tell him? Anything? Or you think he's going to die before he gets to? Red's going to kill him.
I don't know if he's going to spill the beans. I think he's going to take at least whatever kind of torture he can, as long as he can, in order to make that happen.
I mean, we only got 6 episodes left. Somebody better start talking somewhere.
It'd be nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would be fantastic.
8 years. Waiting 8 years for something.
Yeah. And then this guy, Steve, he used to work at this place. And then he did this thing. And he knows this guy. And that guy knows this guy. You know, and just do it like, just whatever. 3 minutes, rattle it off, explain it all. Done. Michael Pena is available. All right. Liz wants to help. I think that was great. I just want to help. And that phone call, I'm like, what? are you like number 2 on the most wanted list? I don't know if I'd be accepting your offers to help either. Thankfully, they played it like they should and said, no, we're not going to do that. They I think probably gave her too much information, though.
Very creative in how they actually work her back into the show. Because like we were talking about when she left the show, mm-hmm. the only way she can come back is if it's like Elizabeth King conclusion or she's only working with Wrestler. So I like the fact that they're able to work her back in such a way that it works out so that she's still part of the task force, but not on the task force. On
the task force, right. I can agree with that. And so she shows up at a Ram Stakeout, and we talked about that. But it's important to point out once again that she did steal a man's croissant. I really think that should be like a terminable offense of life.
I'm gonna say honestly, I know that you shouldn't touch your food, but
never. Don't touch my food.
The way Liz and the way Megan did this scene in particular, like adorable. I'm resurrecting the hashtag swoon for Boone. Because I was like, oh, sure, Liz. You can Megan totally swoon. Have my... Yep, Megan Swoon. There you go.
Megan Swoon.
Oh, my gosh. Super cute, super fun. I was, like, enamored the entire time. She was totally talking to Aram before they went in.
I would have let her come with me. I get it. Yep.
Well played. Oh, swoon my heart, for Boone. My heart, like, pitter-pattered. It was like, oh, that's the Megan we love. Bring ditto. More of that.
No, I mean, I kind of like what she's been doing and different stuff. So I like what the well, characters, I love, but I like that she's a bad guy, but kind of still fun.
And still I like the range, right? She's like doing that kind of stuff in the car. Then they go into the cafe and then she's all like, well, he's FBI. He's certifiable. So where's the damn stuff? It's like she's got that kind of crazy eye also at the same time. It's really good. Good range this week.
Oh man, it was fun, and I like whoever said crime doesn't pay was doing it wrong. I just
that was that lie too.
It was funny. It was a good episode, man. I had a lot of fun. It was good. It was good seeing her have fun, but also you know be pretty serious about whatever and trying not to get played by Townsend. But Townsend kind of had the upper hand because he was cheating. He wasn't really playing it fair.
I notice again the parallelisms between Liz and Red in this particular episode, where he's all like. Is it done? Is it done? Why haven't we heard anything? And Liz is like, is it done? Is it done? Why haven't we heard anything? Mm-hmm. So there's still a lot of that, like same thing, kind of like the slap across the face to Townsend and the slap across the face to Eastern Friend. A lot of parallelisms between those two people. I wonder what because that's
she's
supposed
becoming
to mean.
Red. I'm waiting for her to start just waxing philosophically about nonsense.
Oh, would that be great? I'd love to get what Liz's libations. No, that's not a good one. Liz's. I mean, we've done Liz's lyrics. We did Liz's lectures before, like way back early in season 2. But
right,
I think yeah, it would be great to see her do a Red story. Just do the whole like 2-minute dialogue about a cat.
I'm hoping that they write something like that before the season's out because if you really want to get it paralleled, that would do it. That's a great way to do it right there. So we got her muscle Rocco. I kind of like him. You know, he's a strong, silent type. Looks a little crazy. I like that. Liz and Ram find our friend from the East. Aram does identify him as Ivan Stepanov, so they're a little bit closer, and then also he's a member of Zaslan, who runs Black Ops around the globe. So she's closer, but slips through her fingers. Like, they just didn't get there in time. I wasn't really surprised by that. I was kind of surprised that she didn't get to him first. I really was hoping that she would, but I'm wondering if she's going to be the one that saves him, essentially, in the next episode.
Oh, wouldn't that be really awesome? She saves Ivan, therefore Red now has to be in her debt to get Ivan back. And the only way you get Ivan back is if you tell me what the hell is going on. That'd be a great way to do the reveal.
Oh, yeah. Like it. All right. Well, Liz is having fun, and Red is also having a little bit of a blast hanging out and saves, trying to make this new contact with Priya Lagari, who is sashaying her way through London. She's a world-renowned thief that now will have to work at Red's behest because this is the one last job. This is the last job you need to do. Infiltrate Neville Townsend's organization. We were wondering, like, what is she going to steal? What is she going to steal? His life. That's what she's going for. I thought that was a nice little twist because of the fact that she's a world-renowned thief. You assume she's stealing something, not killing someone. So that was a nice misdirection. And I like her. She's a cool cat.
Yeah, burglar. Very, very calm, very collected. Moves gracefully, like just everything about her just oozes like, please have her on the show for a couple more episodes, because I'd love to get to know definitely. Her character a little bit better.
And, well, it looks like she's still going to be there because she hasn't killed him yet. She hasn't slipped that Mickey in there yet, and we need her to do that.
Sure.
Maybe she can find that face-off machine, and she can disguise herself or something. Get even closer. Disguise herself as Liz.
Oh, that'd be
at the last minute.
No, we already said no more Serenoids. Come on.
No, I'm talking like the actual face-off machine, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Was this Jason Statham? Get the face-off machine. I know you got one in the back. You ever see Spy? It's a great movie. Red works with the feds for fake-out shootout to get Nicholas Obenreiter on his side. I've seen this before. And Priya is in the door. And by doing so, by him vouching for her, basically, Red won't release his client list. And then Red does let Obenreiter go. So he is out there. So I guess he could come back and they could kind of develop him a little further. I just don't know if you can really do that outside of this episode. It really just kind of fit. So anything more on Red that you thought? I mean, I thought the safe bit was really fun. And obviously Dembe was outside because he came in right after him just to make sure that things were smoothed over and Red didn't get duped himself.
It reminds me of the olden days when Red was like, oh, we're meeting in a church. Now we're meeting in a coffee shop. Now we're meeting in an apartment that isn't mine. But we're going to steal this painting anyway on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
Very classic Blacklist. Good job, Taylor.
Very classic. Well, there we go. That was a really good episode. And it didn't do anything. I don't feel like it got any momentum. It didn't take me any further into the plot. Didn't explain anything. I got no answers. But I had fun for 45 minutes. So that's good.
Well, it got us to Ivan. It did what it was supposed to do.
Yeah, and that's what I said. It's a bridge. It's just like getting a piece to connect to another piece. But what I will say, did you notice this? You know, we've been watching the show since season one. This is probably the most serialized it's been.
Oh, yeah. This entire season. Whole eighth season has been boom, 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 boom. Because I don't think there's been one standalone episode other than the bridge episode.
Yeah, I don't think I can remember. Like, every other season, I can rattle off a few episodes where I'm like, oh, that's pretty much on its own. It doesn't really have anything to do with anything. These are all connected. It's almost like 24. I mean, it's just one thing to the next thing to the next thing to the next thing.
Which just makes it even more like that they aired those two episodes in November. Just hold them till January and just go January to May. That's what we love. We love when it's literally like no breaks.
You just want to keep selling that. You're just like, maybe if I say it enough. Oh, will them into it.
Season six from the fans. Remember, season six was the highest rated, one of the highest rated seasons. And that's the season that went January to May because it was literally boom, 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 boom. No breaks.
I do think you got two options. Either you go full procedural next season and just have very minor mythology stuff, like just little, like kind of like the first season was, where it just hits and misses. Or if you stay this really heavily serialized structure, you got to get them closer together because that does lose people.
Liz and Red.
What's that?
Closer together. Liz and Red or the episodes?
No, the episodes. You got to get the episodes closer together.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, all those breaks really mess it up when it's so close together. It's hard to follow. I remember when 24 finally put their episodes together. I was like, oh, finally. No more breaks, which make it confusing to remember what the hell was going on, you know?
Or if it's on Fox, it airs out of order. So could have that happen too.
Boy, they're never going to live that one down, are they?
Ever. Never, ever, ever.
All right. I want to take a second to say thank you to those of you that are supporting the show by going to Patreon. That's P-A-T-R-E-O-N on patreon.com/theblacklistgsm. Special big thanks to our honorary blacklister, Patricia. Also, special shout out to our task force members, Judy and Sharon, Rory, Karen, Bobby Jens, and now Mary, all official task force members. All these people receive cool gifts from us, and you can get a cool gift as well if you donate at the $20 level or higher. Do you want a cool t-shirt or a coffee mug? You know you do. You don't have to stay at the $20 level forever, just a few months to get the cool gifts.
And remember, we are releasing the episodes right after the episode ends. If you are at the $5 level over there at P-A-T-R-E-O-N, go ahead, throw $5 in the fedora, and you get access before anybody else. Stay tuned. We got more great show coming up for you right after this.
Hey there, fellow podcast listener. Do you love video games but are tired of the negativity surrounding most podcasts?
Why not give The Gaming Outsider a try? We set ourselves apart from other video game podcasts by including our community in the discussion on games as much as possible. And hey, we'll never charge you to be part of the show.
We pride ourselves on being an inclusive, family-friendly show while discussing industry news, the games we've been playing, and a weekly topic centered on gaming both new and old.
So check out The Gaming Outsider at the same location you're listening to this fine program, or check out our website, thegamingoutsider.com. And remember, there's no such thing as a bad game, just games that aren't for you.
Hey, this is Amir. I play Aram on The Blacklist, and you are listening to The Blacklist Exposed.
Welcome to Red's Rhetoric, that part of the show where we feature wise words from Red, and when you get to vote for your favorite over on our website, theblacklistexposed.com. Our first clip this week comes when Red visits Sarasota.
Remy, how is the race?
Unfinished.
I found him right at the end of the biking leg.
Imagine my surprise seeing Dembe in Sarasota. I know, I haven't called you back.
It's true, you have been a bit dodgy, but if you had picked up when I called, I never would have learned there was such a singularly dreadful thing as an Iron Man.
You've never heard of an Iron Man?
Not unless you're referring to Rodin's Balzac. There's a funny phrase, Rodin's Balzac. Although that's bronze, not iron, so no, I've never heard of one. Please hydrate. And answer the question I called you about.
Your message said you wanted to talk to Priya. She's my most valuable asset.
Which is why I want her to be an asset of mine. If she agrees, I'll compensate you for your loss.
Pennies on the dollar.
Pennies on the dollar? Dembe, are you listening to this? Penny, I've never paid pennies on the dollar in my life. If I'm known for anything, it's for overpaying. He's forever trying to get me to show some restraint. But listen, we can resolve this right now. I can get Edward to take it up to a few thousand feet, circle back around, come in over the 18th hole, and drop you right into the grandstand. We've done it before. I'm sure we'll do it again.
Our second clip comes when Red wakes up from a nap.
Oh my stars. I've dozed off in caves and coffins, even squeezed between the inside and the outside of the hull of a cargo plane. But my hand of God, I have not slept that soundly since math class.
What's going on? How did you get in here?
Priya, not so fast.
I'll get to the bottom of this.
I wouldn't bet on it.
What is this?
This is where Nigel walks, so you and I can talk. Please close the door. I'd like this part to be private.
Which was your favorite? If you are interested in surviving your next Iron Man, vote #RedDrop. Or if you prefer to sleep through school, vote #RedMath. A quick fun fact on Balzac before Special Agent Intel. Monument to Balzac is actually a sculpture by Auguste Rodin in memory of the French novelist Honoré de Balzac. On July 2nd, 1939, 22 years after the sculptor's death, the model was cast in bronze for the first time. Not to be confused with Aaron's bronze Balzac, because if it was iron, he'd actually be a hunchback.
What just happened?
Get it? Hunchback. Paris jokes.
Yeah, I got it. It went to a weird place.
I literally thought he said bronze Balzac the first time he said it. I was like, did he say what I thought he said? No, he meant Balzac. B-A-L-Z-A-C.
You hear it whatever way you need to hear it. Apparently, you got a dirty mind. Let's get into Special Agent Intel. First up is Sharon Crady. I don't believe Mrs. French is Katerina, and I don't believe she's actually Mrs. French. I believe she is someone else entirely, and she may have killed Mr. French and inserted herself into Liz's life. For what reason and for whom?
Now that is a better theory than Mrs. French's Katerina.
Wow, what a way to shortchange other people's theories.
I'm just
that
saying.
Hurts. That
I'm
hurts saying. Someone. Someone in the world hurts right now because of that. I hope you're happy.
Rory's in a corner crying somewhere.
I hope he's got his little Troy doll and he's slapping it.
James Dean wrote it and said, Troy and Aaron, I concur with y'all about the machine falling so many feet and hitting a concrete slab, and the cipher machine would have broken into pieces.
Lots of them.
Question, though. Reddington told Jellybean that he had hiding money over the years. Actually, Jellybean told Reddington that he had been hiding money over the years and needed to borrow $1 million. So why would Paulin need any money for or a job? Because Glenn did have money.
Maybe she doesn't know where it's at. You know, maybe he hit it.
He hit it and never like left clues to where it would be.
Yeah, he's been hiding it. Doesn't mean he told Paula where it was.
It's true. It'd be in the novel.
I was hiding money. I ain't telling nobody.
That's what I would do. I would have put it in the novel. It's like code inside of the pages and the margins.
Maybe. Maybe in his pillowcase, you know? Maybe it's at the DMV. Under the floorboards. Somebody, next guy gets that job is going to be really happy.
It's in the vending machine. That's why the vending machine never worked.
Boom. Done.
There you go. Solved it.
All right, next. Carol. I thought Liz was parting ways with Townsend after the whole attack on a police station and the disagreement about no space between what you want and so on, but I guess not. I did too, actually. Okay. Otherwise, pretty great episode for her last week, especially like the end with Townsend. Made her seem like more of a threat. Although we better not ask how she was able to just march into his house with two henchmen, find him sleeping unguarded, and pull that plastic bag bit, because it might stop making sense. Well, I mean, she's kind of there all the time. So actually, it seems logical that she could get access to him pretty quickly. About the content of the storage unit, it just contains everything needed for the plot. In one of my many messages, or one of my previous messages, I was wondering how could have Liz put her plans together, and this is how. She got money from Red, but money alone is not enough to go against Reddington's network. This way, the writers can make it more plausible that she is a serious player in this game. Well, plus, they got to catch her up fast, you know, like right. Red's so far ahead of her, they got to have a way to catch her up in some aspect, otherwise it's never going to be a fair fight. It's not the most elegant way. That was my adding to what she said, not what she said. It's not the most elegant way, but it works better than not having it. Miss French is Mr. French's Katerina. I mean, it's possible for sure, but at this point seems unlikely to me. We had the whole, you have a Mr. in your name, but you are a woman with Mr. Kaplan. Sure, other people can do the same thing, but in the context of a TV show, it just seems like a repetition. I mean, yeah, it's network TV. Lots of things repeat. Did you see like the fourth time we faked a death? In this episode, it happens. As for her being the real Katerina, that would mean that the dead Katerina would have known about the real Katerina's location. The dead Katerina seemed extremely desperate for anything that could prove she is not N13. Couldn't she have done it with presenting the real Katerina Rostova? Also, why did the dead Katerina not go after the Russian knot? The writers could provide some explanations for all these questions, but right now I don't see it.
That's the key. She just wouldn't know.
Simple as that. Well, Doesn't know that that's the real Katerina. Problem solved.
I'm just saying we could solve all of this if someone would just come out and say, blonde Katerina was or was not Katerina Rostova, and just put it to bed.
I agree. We've said that needed to be done since like episode 2
yep.
of the year.
Yep.
What are you going to do? It's going to come out later, I'm sure. Wrestler just straight up sold out the post office by giving intel to the target of their investigation. That man really should not stay on the team. I hate to be this guy, but nobody on the team should be on the team if you're going by the law. So do we want to kick them all out? No, they're fun. They're very bad at following the law, but otherwise they're great law officers.
Let's just note that this week also Wrestler gave up the information that got Ivan kidnapped. So I think we should just take Donald's phone away for a while, put it on a timeout.
He got a nod though. Like Cooper gave him a nod, right? He's like, hey, you tell her that. Hey, Aram, you can do that. Go ahead. It's a unsanctioned sanction.
Yeah.
That one's on Cooper. Twice this week is on Cooper.
Makes sense.
Mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying. They all break the law. They are not good officers.
you can still take Donald's phone away and it won't be a problem anymore. People would not be getting intel if it wasn't for Donald's phone.
Oh, he'd find a way. I mean, you kidding me? Boy Scout be like, I'm going to get another phone. I'll make my own call. You ain't my mom. Go borrow my brother Anthony Michael Hall's phone.
All right. Well, Judy B. said, I've been thinking about for a few weeks. I'm a huge procrastinator. I don't think our friend from the East is Sikorsky, even though several people in the group have referred to him as such. Red has never called him that. When he slapped him, Red said, I don't care who you work for. I think who he works for is Sikorsky.
Maybe he works for Katerina Rostova. I'm just saying.
Could be. Could be. I rewound the end of the show a few times, and I don't think that looks like Red's hands typing on the knot to our Russian friend. I keep reading posts that a lot of people are thinking Red and Liz are secretly working together. Seriously? Mm-hmm. It's so obvious they're not. Mainly, I believe, because Red never would have had Marvin tortured just to pretend him and Liz are on the opposite sides. And there is no
Take
way.
Take it like a man, Marvin. Do this for me. Take it like a man.
Make it look good for the camera. And there's no way they played hug and get beyond it after Anne's bloody accident. Only Aram thinks Liz deserves a hug. And that's because he doesn't know about Anne.
And because of those eyes.
Mm-hmm. In regards to the question, what does it mean to mobilize the assets? Didn't Liz translate old newspaper clippings that Katerina had in storage? So how old were they? Kat been dead a while, so wouldn't assets have already been mobilized? Question mark. Good question. I asked the group if they thought it was talking about money, people, or equipment, such as guns, tanks, whatever, because I have no idea. Love that Jelly's mom is going to be working for Red. Love, love, love your podcast. Judy.
Thank you, Judy. We needed that after some other emails, so appreciate that. Yeah, I don't mobilize the assets. I mean, that can mean a lot of things. That can mean just get your people in place. That can mean get the plan in action. I mean, there's lots of ways you can take that. But I think it's more about a few people, a few pawns, or a few chess pieces to make whatever end game or move for this particular season they're going for.
Or if it was an old clipping, could have been like, hey, Katerina, Townsend knows that you're alive and he's coming for you, so mobilize your team because you need some protection.
All right. Brenda Bain says, I have been a faithful listener since season 2 of your podcast. And when season 1 was available, I listened through all of them again. I heard that season was 50% less awesome. You guys had a fairly objective slant to your critique of the episodes. After 8 seasons, I realized that there is such a thing as burnout. I was a teacher. Does that mean that teachers get burnt out?
They do. What you're saying? I would think so.
Okay. Recently, I have not been able to finish the last 3 episodes, so you might not be hearing this, because you might have quit already. In which case, why do I need to finish your email? I'm just kidding. I'm sorry to say that you two are sounding like an old married couple arguing about something that only has value for the two of you. Troy and Aaron, I love y'all. However, I think you guys are taking this so personally that arguing with each other and your fans has been the longest segment of the show. I miss the episodes when who is to blame for wasn't the whole premise of the show. I hate that I felt I had to write this, but I will truly miss the Blacklist Exposed. Feel free to jump all over my comments. I can jump all over them. I just don't agree with them. But you have a right to your opinion.
Yeah, I mean, something.
Love y'all too. Love you too. And if you, maybe if it's 4 for 4, you weren't hearing any of this. So we could really just talk some smack.
That would be.
But I'm not going to.
That would be rude. But no, I think, like I said, part of it is like I was off for the last month because of some tragic losses in my life in particular. But we wanted to make sure that we still put out a quality show for all of you. I know that.
I don't care about that.
There's some. Yeah, and you are so. This is the thing. She's like, why are you yelling? You guys are an old married couple. It's like, what you don't know is that we have been an old married couple since 2012. So before the show even happened.
I'm not arguing. I literally talk to him like this on a regular basis. Like, there's nothing new. It's not arguing. It's just how we talk.
And it's actually fun to actually see the emotion behind it, because you should see the emotion when it's on text. It literally sounds exactly like this when I read it.
Except I can throw GIFs in there.
Yes.
Can't do that on a podcast. I wish I could. I wish I could put memes in podcast form. I would do it.
That would be an interesting thing. We should work on a service that does that.
Some of them are naughty.
But at the end of the day, you know, if you don't feel like the show is great anymore, that's the best thing about the subscribe and follow button. You know, it's like you don't have to listen. You don't have to stick around. If you think the show is great, awesome. We love you. You're glad you're here. we're going to keep doing it because we love the show. And I think we bring some insightful things each and every week. Like we brought the book that Dembe was reading this week, and we brought the information about Aaron's ball sack and the statue and all kinds of other stuff. So, I mean,
that just happened.
It's just it's a labor of love. Yes, there are definitely times in the season, any season, I think if you go back and listen to any season, where we get to that 15, 16, 17 stretch, and it's like, oh my God, is it each season ever going to end? Because at some point it does start to get a little bit, you know, long in the tooth, and it's a little bit like work. And but then we always like come out of that funk and we finish strong in the last three or four episodes of the season. So, yeah, just stick with us. I think we're going to have some, we're going to have a lot of fun here as we ramp up season 8.
That was a really nice thing you just said after, you know, saying them basically there, I'm done with your podcast. That was very nice how you handled that.
I was talking to the people that were still here. That's why.
Oh, cause I'm like, don't let the good Lord hit you with the.
And this is why, for all those that don't understand how radio shows work, there's this thing called Dick, Dork, and Jane. And unfortunately, we don't have the Jane on the show today, but Aaron is the Dick and I am the Dork. And
that's why. I didn't write an email saying I was leaving your show. I'm just saying, I'm not the bad guy. Don't get mad at me. Ah.
It is a shtick for a reason, because it works and it makes it entertaining.
It's just who I am. It's just who I am. Hey, if you love the show, thanks for coming back, and I hope you keep listening to it. If you're hoping for some joyful apologies or pleads, that's not going to come from me.
If you want to see how much of an asshole Aaron can be, go listen to Westworld Season 2, beyondwestworldpodcast.com.
Boy, they were so mad at me in that
They season. Were so mad at you that one.
I'm sorry the show started to make some weird choices. It's not my fault. Blame them. God, that was a fun podcast.
I mean, that is a life lesson saying right there, right? Life gives you lemons, you make lemonade. Life gives you cow pies, well, you know.
And Brenda, just so you know, you'll never top that, those emails, because one I got was, hey, dear Aaron, you're a dick. That's it. That was the email. It was fabulous. It was like the best email I've ever gotten. I wanted it framed.
But seriously, we love all of you. Thanks so much for listening. Thanks for being here week to week. And I think that'll do it for this week's episode and getting ready for, I think, number 5 on the blacklist. We have two in the top 10 that are still open. So number 5 next week, and then we'll see who ends up being number 2.
And I still love you, Brenda, even if you don't love us anymore. All right. Well, that's going to conclude this discussion. Now is the time to recommend The Blacklist to your friend, your enemy, or your neighbor. And when you do, please also recommend they listen and subscribe to The Blacklist Exposed podcast. It's even better if you listen all the way through. All the case profiles can be found at theblacklistexposed.com and everywhere great podcasts can be heard. Yes, I said great award-winning podcasts can be heard.
Yes, and definitely listen all the way through for the outtakes at the end. Because for more great Aaron and Troy hijinks, you can follow us on your favorite social media outlet. I'm at Troy Heinrichs. He's at Aaron Smirks. Together, we are at The Blacklist GSM. Talk about the show, the podcast, or your favorite novel that just is dark and mysterious. We need a book club. That's what we need. We need a book club for the summer.
People don't read anymore. They risen.
They risen. This is true.
They risen.
We need a risen club.
I don't want to risen. That's just weird. Big thanks for listening. And don't forget to answer our profiling question. Will our friend from the East survive? Or will they relocate him to our friend from the West? Because they put him on a plane.
Did Analytics sing Into the West while it happens? That'd be great.
Look at that. That's a good pull. Good for you. I'm proud of you.
I love that song. I love it. Cry every time. All right. We'll see you guys next week.
Bye, Brenda.
Until next time, I'm Agent Troy Heinrichs. That's at Troy Heinrichs on Twitter. And if you want to learn more about me, just visit, well, about.me/Troy Heinrichs.
And I'm Agent Aaron Peterson. You can hear me talking about movies and TV on the Hollywood Outsider podcast, as well as Remake This Movie Right. We are available at thehollywoodoutsider.com or on Twitter at 5Popcorn. Be sure to subscribe, download the app, submit your feedback, but most importantly, keep yourself off of
the blacklist.
The Blacklist Exposed is a Golden Spiral Media production. Find more of our great podcasts at goldenspiralmedia.com/podcasts.
Rory's in a corner crying somewhere.
I hope he's got his little Troy doll and he's slapping it.
James Dean said, hey, Troy Aaron.
With his ball sack. Sorry.
Sorry. I'm 12.